keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY. Thank you all for tuning in, and glad to be back with you. This is our last show for the week here with me, anyway. And you can make sure you catch SM Gibson tomorrow night and LaVon on Friday. Keep in mind that we're 5 days a week now on the Anti-Media. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 718-717-8296. We are going to be taking some callers tonight. Last show we weren't, but tonight we will be. I'm sure everybody wants to talk about the Pope, so hopefully people have a few opinions to give us on this guy, because I know it's a pretty controversial topic. And pretty polarizing, I guess you could say, but we got plenty of other things to go over tonight. I am joined by our awesome journalist and editor at the Anti-Media, Carrie Wedler. How are you doing tonight, Carrie?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being with us, and we always appreciate you being on the show and providing some insight. So we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff tonight, including one of your articles, but first off, let's talk about ISIS. Because there's been so much news recently on ISIS and what's going on with the U.S.'s efforts in Syria and Iraq. One piece of big news today that really broke yesterday is General John Allen, which is Obama's quote-unquote ISIS czar. He's the guy that Obama's put in charge of the fight against ISIS. He's stepping down. And so there's plenty of speculation as to why. I believe that he kind of said it was because he wants to spend more time with his wife, which, of course, is probably at least part of it, but it's probably not the full story. In fact, I'd say that's probably the very least of what's actually going on. If you've been following the Anti-Media for a while, you've probably seen a lot of our ISIS coverage. And from what I can tell, it seems like the entire narrative against ISIS is just falling apart right now. I mean, more and more people are coming out and saying, you know what, ISIS is a creation of the U.S., whether directly or indirectly. I believe it's more of an indirect creation, as far as, you know, we set the stage for ISIS. We also destabilized Syria, helped fund the radicals there that turned into ISIS eventually. So, you know, there's all kinds of different aspects to this. So this guy stepping down to me is kind of one of the maybe the final blow to Obama's effort to go fight over there in that region. Now, keep in mind that we've been kind of calling it on the Anti-Media for a while. This whole war against ISIS is really more or less about toppling the Assad regime, the Syrian government, because that's a government that is we've been trying to kind of take down for a long time. It's not a new policy. It's been going on for, you know, at least since 2008. It's been documented, and thanks to WikiLeaks, we know about all that stuff. But you know, I think that this could be maybe the final blow for Obama. I think that he's going to have to really start answering some questions regarding ISIS and what we're really doing, where they came from, why they're still around, why none of the stuff that we're doing over there as far as the bombing of them, and all these countries are bombing them, and none of it's working. In fact, from what I can tell, I mean, they just, their numbers grow. The more we bomb them, the more people go over there to fight for them. What do you think about that?
I agree, but I think especially with concern to this story, Claire Burnish wrote an article on this for the Anti-Media, and she quoted, Alan is saying, I vote for sooner rather than later, discussing the need to employ aggressive action against ISIS in Syria. So this is someone who was really advocating for military action, and although, as the Anti-Media has reported, we know that Obama has not been totally paralyzed in acting against ISIS. There have been airstrikes, you know, they are active in Syria, but my concern is that the way Fox News is going to spin this, the way conservatives are going to spin this, is that he's stepping down because Obama didn't have the sense to take more aggressive action. And it seems like, honestly, the story hasn't been covered nearly as much as it should, as many of the ISIS articles have been coming out this week. But I think that there's a lot of potential for this to be manipulated into another pro-war story and talking point.
Yeah, I agree with you, and that's something that we got to keep an eye on. Now, keep in mind that Obama ran as an anti-war president, right? He came into power saying he's going to end the war, saying he's going to stop the nation building. Coincidentally, that's pretty much the same platform George Bush came to power on, and I think that's a platform that a lot of people run on. Now, the new batch of Republican candidates aren't running on that platform. They're running on, hey, let's bomb the world platform. And that's pretty, you know, a pretty scary aspect. Hillary Clinton is a known war. Hillary Clinton is a known warmonger, if you know what I mean. And so, you know, we're gonna have to keep an eye on that. I think this general stepping down, it kind of goes hand in hand with what he also said last week. Last week he said that, you know, despite the fact that we spent $500 million. Building up a supposed, you know, moderate Syrian rebel army, there's only four or five guys left fighting, you know. And so, I mean, it kind of goes to show that
literally four or five, like, yeah. Not kind of four or five, not like, oh, it's a few hundred and it seems like four or five, literally four or five fighters.
Well, there were 60 of them. There were 60 at first, but they went into their first time in the battle. And this is the thing that's really scary. The strategists assumed that these 60 fighters were going to walk in and be welcomed with open arm by Al-Qaeda. I mean, they thought the Al-Qaeda people that are over there that are – keep in mind, Al-Qaeda is now fighting against ISIS as well. They thought that these U.S.-trained rebels were going to be welcomed in with open arms and going to fight alongside Al-Qaeda to go fight against ISIS, supposedly. Now, that didn't happen, and as soon as they went into Syria – they got basically abruptly beat, and they went from 60 to 4 or 5, and even the commander was captured, and I mean, just a nightmare, you know. And so the strategy isn't working. Obama, you know, once again, he can't really advocate for a ground invasion because that's not, you know, people just aren't ready for that. American public is not ready for that yet. Maybe they will be when the next president comes in. If another big, you know, attack happens like 9/11, then that'll happen. But at this moment in time, the U.S. public rejected an all-out invasion or overthrow of the Syrian government in 2013. So I don't really see that happening right now. But, you know, you got to keep in mind that several weeks ago, it was released that 50 of these 50 people from the
Defense Intelligence Agency,
from the DIA,
for SecCom.
Yeah, there was 50 people from the DIA, which basically signed a letter saying, hey, you know, this ISIS intelligence has been watered down. Somebody in the Pentagon, somebody within the Obama administration, some intelligence officials are basically playing down the severity of ISIS in order to make it look like the strategy is working. And so Obama, keep in mind that Obama had to kind of act like ISIS wasn't that big of a deal to kind of get the mission started and to allow the U.S. to start bombing in that country, because they didn't want the public thinking that we're going to get pulled into some drawn out war. But that's exactly what this is starting to shape up into. You know, it's starting to look like, you know, this is going to be a long, drawn out thing. And we thought we were done with Iraq. We thought Obama ended that war, but now it's not. You know, now we're back. You know, and so you got to really think about, you know, what is the answer that's going to be given to us? It's going to most likely be, you know, they're going to wait till the next president comes in, and then they're going to say, okay, now let's go send in ground forces into Iraq under a Republican president. You know, I wouldn't doubt that from happening at all. We got a couple callers on the line. I just want to introduce our normal panel is reassembled tonight. First off, DB Schwartz, how are you doing tonight, man? Okay, DB's on the line, but he's not answering. I know Jake's there, though. What's up, Jake?
Hey, man. I'm good. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we hear you. We hear you fine. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there. Yeah, the Syria thing is getting more and more interesting. I just read this article today about the Doomsday Seed Vault in Norway, which you know, is reserved for literally, I mean, these are archives of seeds that are supposed to be in store for a doomsday-type scenario, apocalyptic conditions. And Syria is, I mean, Syria is withdrawing. I mean, they're being forced to withdraw seeds, or the first actual withdrawal from that bank is occurring. And, I mean, this is, you know, Nick, like, you know, you've been calling it from the beginning, but Syria was on the list, the Project for a New American Century. It clearly delineated before even 9/11 a very clear list of Middle East countries that needed to be taken out or needed to be a part of it, and Afghanistan, Iraq, you know, Libya, now Syria, Iran. These are all countries on there, and I you know, it was a kind of a dice roll, which was going to happen, Iran or Syria, and I guess strategically they realized that Syria would be easier to foment chaos inside of, but that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, exactly, man, and it's really sad. did you read why they were pulling those seeds out?
No, I'm looking into it right now. Give me like 1 minute and I'll get you that answer.
So I'm guessing maybe, you know, some of the crops got destroyed because of ISIS, and, you know, maybe some of the farmers had to let their crops die. And keep in mind that Seed Vault is all about, you know, preserving biodiversity and diversified seeds and things like that. So maybe a pretty rare crop got killed off over there for whatever reason. And yeah, man, I mean, that's pretty horrible. A lot of these guys are using food and water as warfare. You know, they're purposely starving out farmers, not letting them get water to try to do certain things. And it's horrible. It really is.
So what I'm seeing here is that the seeds, which include samples of wheat, barley, and grasses due to the dry region, have been requested by researchers in the Middle East to replace seeds in a gene bank near the Syrian city of Aleppo, and that has been damaged by the war. So yeah, these are very real results we're seeing. You know, I mean, this is what a litmus test. I mean, a seed bank out in a glacier, buried in a glacier, intended for apocalyptic use, is already being tapped here in 2015 because of our economic imperialism here.
Yeah, exactly, man. And you know, this isn't a small scale displacement over there. It's the biggest one since World War II. Millions of people have been displaced.
11 million people.
Yeah, I mean, it's just huge. It's enormous. And unfortunately, U.S. taxpayers are kind of responsible for it, man. That's why we got to pay a lot more attention to what our government does, and we got to demand more accountability, transparency, and that kind of thing. Otherwise, this stuff's just going to keep continuing to happen. Now, I don't want to go too deep into ISIS. Next, I want to introduce our other guest, our special co-host, Manny Aguilar. How are you doing, man?
Good, Nick. Tell us that. Yeah, just very happy to, you know, basically see the Pope, you know, basically eat with the homeless and come to Republican. I think I can't be with them, you know, worth of his time, you know, feel like that. And, of course, at the same time, you know, we keep monitoring that. We don't want him to make this guy a saint, you know, because it goes against what I, you know, basically, you know, the killing of all these Indians and stuff like that and all that, and it's just one of those things, you know, but it was kind of moving to see that little girl that Pope said let the girl through and stuff like that, and she was able to, from her parents being from Oaxaca and stuff like that, and it's, and it brings attention to the indigenous people and gave her, you know, the girl gave him a letter and stuff like that, and I was really moved by it because, you know, with Columbus Day coming up, you know, it's kind of nice to know that in Seattle we're going to be celebrating Indigenous Day instead of Columbus Day and stuff like that, you know, and they're just... you know, hopefully we'll change that around the, you know, the United States here pretty soon and stuff like that, you know, but it's just pretty cool to see positive things happening here and there, you know, other than all that negative stuff that's happening around the world, yeah.
Yeah, man. We're going to get into the Pope a little bit in a little bit, a few minutes later into the show. and once DB gets online, I know he wants to get on the show tonight. He told me he had some stuff to do, so hopefully he gets in here pretty soon. I want to continue to focus on the Middle East here before we go on. there's a new UN report published this week talking about the toll that our drone program has taken on Yemen. Now, keep in mind, Yemen is embroiled in another civil war right now going on, and it's being backed up technically. Technically speaking, it's being backed up by the U.S. It's being spearheaded by our quote-unquote allies in Saudi Arabia and other Gulf Sunni states. It's once again a sectarian war between Sunni and Shia. Of course, the Sunnis are backed by the Saudi Arabians. But we've had a drone program going on there for a long time. And, I mean, just so far this year, last year, sorry, 40 Yemeni civilians have been killed by U.S. drone strikes, and that's 60% higher than the number of civilians killed by al-Qaeda last year. So, you know, this is crazy news, man. Our drone program is killing more civilians in Yemen than this terror group, al-Qaeda.
Well, yeah, and I think one of the biggest concerns about it is that the way that the drone program is justified is by saying not only that it's protecting Americans, but that we're fighting these oppressive regimes in far-off lands. And if the drone program that's supposed to rescue these people is killing more people than the group you're rescuing them from, then I think there may be a problem with the strategy. And clearly that's happening because it is inspiring more people to become radicalized. And rather than radicalizing against the groups that America wants to shut down, they're totally mobilizing against the U.S. So it's just ongoing strategy. Nobody ever seems to learn, or they just don't care. Their concern is not really stabilizing the Middle East. It's making profits and making sure that they adhere to all the people who fund their campaigns. So it's not really a surprise, but it is very concerning.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that we made note of here, and this article is on the Anti-Media, written by John Vibes. The other thing that we make note of here is that the true death, you know, civilian death toll is actually probably much, much higher due to the fact that if, you know, as long as the person that is killed in a drone strike is a male and above the age of 16, they're considered militants. Doesn't matter if it's just some dude that's in his 20s, that's just an innocent guy that's just at work or at home. If he's blown up in a drone strike, he's automatically counted as a militant. So the only people that are being counted on this list are children and women and maybe people that are over, you know, really old people. Other than that, any males that are killed within the fighting, quote unquote, fighting age, they're basically considered terrorists. And this goes for the entire drone program in the Middle East. If in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, in Somalia, in all the countries that we're bombing with drones, as long as the people that we're killing are males within the fighting age, they're basically considered terrorists. So this number could be in the hundreds, it could be in the thousands. We don't know because there isn't an accurate count because they just lump all these people in together, you know. And we all know that all these people aren't militants. They aren't all terrorists. Most Muslims, 99.9% of them aren't, you know. And so it's just really sad to see that our drone program is just really destructive. Almost all the candidates that are running for office right now have vowed to continue the drone program, including the beloved Bernie Sanders. Even though he did, you know, he did say that it's overreaching, but he didn't rule out using it. So, you know, and you know, this thing is going to continue. And as you know, entering ground troops into the Middle East has become a very unpopular prospect. Nobody wants to enter ground troops in there. So the more the less people want to enter ground troops, well, the military-industrial complex still wants to make money, so they're still going to be bombing. They're just going to be using drones instead of troops. So we're going to see a further mechanization, automation of the drone of the warfare altogether. And you know, it's a really scary prospect. You remove the human element, and these drones don't have a conscience. These drones aren't going to come home and blow the whistle on what's going on. The drones aren't going to come home and be guilty and commit suicide. The drones aren't going to be conscientious objectors. You know, the drones just do whatever you program them to do. You know, for now, until we start dabbling too much with AI, and then who knows what's going to happen. I mean, this is a scary prospect, no matter which way you slice it. So yeah, I mean, that's just something to keep in mind, because what's going on in Yemen right now is turning into another Syria, and once again, we're behind it 100%. Us and our allies, and the U.S. has already said, yeah, we support what Saudi Arabia is doing over there. Saudi Arabia has been blowing the shit out of this country, killing all kinds of civilians, and there's going to be national protests about this war, because it's just not being talked about very much. But it's something that really needs to get out there, and we need to put a stop to all these things, man, because the other problem with all of this foreign policy is that it just creates more and more terrorists, you know what I mean? And so they go out there under the disguise of saying that they're protecting our freedom and that they're protecting human rights. The fact of the matter is they're making us less safe, and most of the time our foreign policy is on the wrong side of justice. You know, they're on the wrong side of democracy and freedom. You know, we're doing the wrong thing many times. So I mean, that's just something to keep in mind. I do want to shift away from this Middle East stuff. We covered it extensively last week, and the week before. In fact, we covered it on every show, so go back and listen to some of our older stuff. If you want to find a show where we really break it down to a geopolitical level, just go on YouTube and search Anti-Media Radio with Manar Muawesh, and you'll find a whole hour long of just breaking this stuff down. Did you have something else to say?
I was just going to say, tell them how to spell her name.
Oh, yeah. Just go on YouTube and search Anti-Media Radio and then Manar, M-N-A-R, and you'll find it. And, I mean, it's an hour-long program, and we really get into the breaking down of what's going on in Syria. And long story short, it's about oil. Surprise, surprise. you wrote an article a while back about a study that came out that showed that countries that were resource-rich, including oil, were like 100 times more likely to be invaded, right?
Yeah, it was some staggering figure. And, I mean, it makes perfect sense. It's always a resource, but in this case, yeah, it's oil. And it reflects in the foreign policy we see conducted around the world today.
So next, I want to go into your article, Carrie, briefly, because our promo meme tonight was also kind of related to the drug war and the prison-industrial complex. So... Mm-hmm. You have an article out today that is titled Taking Selfies Officially More Dangerous Than Using Cannabis. So what's this all about?
So someone at Mashable decided to do a comparison of the number of people who died taking selfies, whether they fell from a ledge like a Japanese tourist did at the Taj Mahal this week. And I think that's sort of what sparked the trend on the selfie conversation this week. But this writer found that more people had died of selfies in 2015 than they had died of shark attacks. And shark attacks are sort of like just a really common fear that humans tend to have. And so going off of that, basically what happened, the Chicago Tribune, actually, I should note, they noted that that's not really a fair comparison, because taking selfies is not inherently dangerous, while getting killed by a shark, that's just as it is on its face, dying from a shark attack it's dangerous, but taking a selfie isn't. So we figured at Anti-Media, okay, well, shark attacks are rare enough, but what's even less common than a shark attack? Oh, yeah, death by marijuana. So we just decided to compare that, considering marijuana has never killed anyone. And looking into the ways people have died from selfies, it's just sort of, it's one of these, like, oh, I don't want to live on this planet anymore, because I mean, we were looking at someone who was so determined to take a selfie with a rattlesnake. They had it on their neck and they got bit and the guy might lose his hand. And people die trying to take pictures of the running of the bulls. They die trying to take pictures at the top of monuments or skyscrapers, to the point where even a couple governments have actually stepped in. Russia had a campaign because dozens of people were dying of selfies earlier this year, which implies that the Mashable article is an even lower estimate than actually exists, because there is no real way to track death from selfie. It's probably going to arise now. People are going to start paying more attention, but it's just so ridiculous the lengths that people will go to get pictures of themselves to share to their friends, which there's nothing inherently wrong with. But if you're doing it to the point where you're putting yourself in dangerous situations, you may need to check your priorities.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. The one of the pictures that we used for the article was a guy literally taking a selfie with in front of a great white shark. So it has gotten kind of crazy. There was I saw a video the other day where a guy decided to go run into a small tornado to take a selfie, and luckily he survived down in Australia. But I mean, it is getting kind of ridiculous, right? Now you recently put out a video, and you're going to be re-releasing it.
Yes, the video had a typo, and I'm an editor, so that could not stand. But it will be coming back up, and it explores a lot of these disparities in value, I'd like to call it, between selfie culture and things that are really happening.
So one of the points that you made here is that selfies are more dangerous than using cannabis.
Yes, that is true.
And we had some other controversy recently out of the last Republican debate because Carly Fiorina was trying to say that basically she was trying to say that cannabis is more dangerous than drinking a beer. And we released an article kind of debunking that, because as far as all the research that's gone on, it basically shows that cannabis is not dangerous at all, basically. And there's multiple studies showing the health benefits, but one in particular that showed that driving while under the influence of cannabis is basically as if you're driving sober. But as we all know, driving drunk is extremely dangerous and leads to a lot of deaths every year. So, you know, we kind of put out an article as a rebuttal against this propaganda. And I guess that's something that I want to talk about tonight, especially since our promo for the show was about how a lot of countries are shutting down their prisons because they don't have enough criminals anymore. Meanwhile, the U.S., our prisons here are just massively overcrowded, you know, and it kind of just goes to show the failure of the drug war. But what we're seeing as a common thread in the Republican debates and the Republican candidates is that almost all of these people are drug warriors outside of Rand Paul, which just comes off as the crazy uncle in the room that nobody wants to talk to. And unfortunately, he's the only guy that makes any sense up there. But all of these candidates, including Carly Fiorina, including Jeb Bush, I mean, I haven't heard Trump talk about it. Then again, Trump doesn't really have any policy standpoints. He just says a bunch of dumb shit. But, you know, the common thread we see here is that they're all against legalizing marijuana, you know. And so what do you think it is that makes these people, you know, be so adamant to keep it illegal?
I mean, I think it's decades of effective propaganda. These people have been convinced that marijuana is the silent killer and that they're losing their children to it. And I mean, it's been around for decades and people are doing okay. And I think especially people are so, I don't want to say deluded, that's the word that came to mind, but people are so guided into believing that other drugs are okay, that they have this stigma attached to the ones the state says is illegal, which really comes down to like this fundamental issue of, well, do we trust the government to be telling us what's safe for us? Do we trust them to regulate what we're allowed to put in our bodies? Is that not our fundamental right? And I think as much as the right hates big government, they're totally okay with going into the most fundamental parts of your being, telling you to rate or thinking they can regulate your body chemistry. And I really do think it is decades of propaganda, though, because they have been pushing it for years, and it is starting to change because the culture is changing. And that's, I think, a really positive development. I mean, even seven years ago, smoking weed wasn't really acceptable, and it's becoming increasingly so.
Yeah, that's a great point. Another side of it, I think, to keep in mind, not only is it the propaganda, But as we've covered relatively extensively on the anti-media, a lot of these candidates, including Hillary Clinton, but Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio in particular, are receiving a lot of money from the prison industrial complex, from the private prison industry, and things like that. And looking at the, if you follow the money trail back, to see who spends money to keep marijuana illegal, cannabis illegal, well, it all traces right back to those prison, you know, private prison industries. So that's another thing to keep in mind, is that it's not just the propaganda, and it definitely isn't their morality. These guys have no morality. They believe in bombing people to spread peace. You know what I mean? They don't believe in morality at all. So it's not that, but what it is, I think, at least partially, is the money. These guys receive this money from these industries that make a lot of money from the war on drugs, and so they keep these policies going.
And then they sell it as saving your children. And that's what Carly Fiorina did. She had to appeal to the debt. Was it her stepdaughter or her daughter? I don't.
She said her daughter, but.
Her daughter.
You know, after some digging, it come to find out that her daughter actually died from drinking alcohol and doing prescription pills. That stuff is legal. So what in the hell is she talking about?
And she's trying to lump marijuana
and she's
in
trying
with
to,
that.
Oh, well, it's because of marijuana. Well, no, it's not. It's because of the legal drugs that
the
these
ones,
guys are pumping into our system on purpose.
The ones the government say are okay.
Yeah, and another industry that both of those industries, in fact, the pharmaceutical industry and the alcohol industry. I didn't think that was one of them, the ones that would be on the list, but it is. We have a couple articles on the anti-media about who pays to keep cannabis illegal. Alcohol and pharmaceutical are both on that list. They're in the top five.
And I believe there's a lot of industry as well because of the versatility of hemp. At least I know that's relevant in the history of making marijuana illegal. I don't want to speak too much because I don't know the details, but there are all sorts of people that want it banned. And when you have enough money and you have the state behind you, that's what happens.
Yeah, exactly. I mean...
And oh, on that note, I just do want to add, we didn't cover it because it was just sort of a side story, but the DEA's new chief who took over because of the prostitution scandal with the last one, Michelle Lionheart, this new guy, Chuck Rosenberg, who is actually sort of a Patriot Act surveillance state attorney who worked his way up through the Bush administration, he made headlines a couple weeks ago by saying that he said something about marijuana that had sort of a positive effect. Like it might be, I can't remember exactly what he said this week, that no, it should still be a Schedule I drug, which means that it has no medicinal benefit. And he expressed that he was open to researching it, but he decided that he wouldn't want his kids smoking it. And so it's bad. And therefore no one in the country should be allowed to smoke it either.
I believe he said that it was less dangerous than heroin.
Yes. He admitted that because the last DEA chief wouldn't admit it. So a tiny bit of progress, but no policy change.
Yeah. And all the while, what's going on here is that study after study, research after research, anecdotal evidence has been just piling up showing that cannabis has almost a miracle effect on health issues, including stopping seizures in children, you know, reducing addiction to painkillers and opiates, reducing overdose amounts in states that have legalized.
Well, and they're finding research. There's a British company, I believe, that's been testing CBD, which is what they give the children with epilepsy often. It's used for cancer. And they're finding that it might even help treat schizophrenia, which the propaganda has always said weed causes, which is totally false,
that
of
it
course.
Causes psychosis. That's completely bogus. That's not true at all. So on that note, let's kind of shift over here to the Pope. U.S. and he's making a bunch of waves. He's causing a bunch of things to go trending and stuff. And, you know, we've covered the Pope relatively, you know, we've covered him a little bit here and there. Now, this guy, I mean, I got to give him credit. He's probably the best Pope in our lifetime, as far as, you know, being more open to a lot of issues that are now becoming a bit more acceptable, like gay marriage and, you know, things like that. He recently said that even atheists can go to heaven and things, you know, and I'm not a believer in heaven or any of that stuff, but I mean, at least he's saying nice stuff. You know, and he's saying things that people want to hear, I guess you can say. I know Manny wanted to talk a bit about the Pope, so I'm gonna go ahead and let Manny get the first word in here, and then we'll open the lines up for a few callers and see what our listeners think about the Pope. Anyone that wants to call in, feel free to join us. 718-717-8296. If you do get on the line, make sure you mute your microphone and your radio, and then we'll get to you based on your area code, and then you can talk. Manny, go ahead, man.
Okay. Well, you know, being anti-religion and stuff like that, I've never really paid attention to too many popes, basically. But this pope, you know, comes from Latin America and has been kind of like, speaks both languages and stuff like that. And, of course, all the haters that say speak English first haven't said nothing to the pope, you know, so I don't think they dare even say something to the pope about that, you know. But it was kind of moving to see, you know, some of his, people that were, you know, security and keeping everybody away and stuff like that. And it just happened to the parents of a Oaxaca, family.
Hey, come on.
You know, that wants to stay here, you know, in the country, you know. Sophie True, 5 years old, actually got to run, and, of course, security's blocking her and all that. And then the Pope stops, you know, his vehicle and basically tells the other security guard to let the girl go by and stuff like that. And so they bring her over. And it was, an indigenous woman, you know, and stuff like that. Young lady, as she said, 5 years old. And it's great, you know, to have been touched by the Pope, you know, how the family came all the way from Los Angeles. So that became a big story and stuff like that, you know. And also, he's basically told everybody that any church that's not helping the poor should be not tax exempt anymore. They should start, you know. So he's rocking the boat and within the church, you know, stuff like that. I mean, because he's coming out with, you know, he's apologized to drought of indigenous people around the world and stuff like that, you know, for what the church has done, the sins and stuff. And so he's, you know, I mean, you can't change the past, but you can at least have somebody that has the guts to apologize and stuff like that, even if he's rocking the boat right now. So so there's sort of good things that, you know, that have been happening and stuff like that. And I was really moved by seeing him not have lunch with the Republicans. He told the Republicans he was going to go have lunch with the homeless people in Washington, D.C. and stuff like that. So that was a really great gesture, you know, from coming from the Pope and stuff like that, because the Pope is seen different than a president of a country. So, I mean, so it's kind of nice that, you know, basically to see little gestures like that, you know. And of course, the only fight that we're having basically is that we don't want person that he has to, you know, become sainthood because of the killing of all the Native Americans and stuff like that. He had a lot to do with that and stuff like that. So that's one of the things we are boycotting, on that, you know, that person becoming a saint, you know.
Yeah, man. One of the things that I really respected about what the Pope has recently said was that he apologized for the treatment of the indigenous people here in the U.S., in North America, South America, on behalf of the Vatican, and, you know, by the Spaniards, the Catholics, things they did under the banner of Christianity a long time ago. And, you know, he apologized for that. But Manny, as you're mentioning, he's getting ready to canonize Junipero Serra, which is this guy that was here in San Diego, in fact. He was a one of the missionaries that ran the mission here. And, you know, this guy was brutal. You know, he killed and enslaved and forcefully re-educated a bunch of Native Americans to put them into Catholicism using really brutal tactics. And now the Pope is about to make this guy into a saint, right? And so, yeah, that's kind of contradictory to what he's been saying as far as his apologies to the you know, indigenous people in the Americas about the treatment that they've got. So yeah, and I mean, this guy, you know, he's said a lot of good things. I don't really see much of on the action side of things, like policies that he's actually changed. But he does talk a pretty good game, and he's making a lot of new fans, and he's also making a lot of enemies. One thing that I've noticed a lot of is that now the conservatives are kind of against this guy, you know, and they're, you know, I saw one hilarious one from Rick Santorum when, you know, he was talking about climate change, and the Pope was addressing climate change and, you know, saying that it's a problem that we need to deal with. And Santorum said, "Hey, you know what? The Pope needs to leave the climate stuff to the scientists." And you know, the funny part was that the Pope actually is a scientist. So that was pretty hilarious because it kind of shut him up.
Hey Nick, also like, you know, you guys are making great points, and this is a pretty balanced assessment of the Pope. He is saying good things, and I do think there's aspects of it where, I mean, this is a very real effort to hone in on a populist movement to try and change. You know, he's been very outspoken about the capitalist system and about, you know, social inequity and how that needs to change. I you know what though, like, I just can't help but being a little skeptical when so many people get on board, you know, bowing down through memes and comments on Facebook to a person who essentially represents like one of the most barbaric institutions in the history of the world. And, you know, look, he's trying to atone for the past, but you're going to have to do a little bit more than a few PR campaigns to do that. And really, this is just kind of like, I mean, you know, there's a large part of it that's just kind of reputation management here, the opportunistic way of tapping in on, you know, the world is, you know, a lot of people are very disenfranchised, disillusioned with the world right now. And all of a sudden here comes the Pope, you know, tapping in on all these populist urges, you know, gay rights, which is a good thing, anti-capitalistic fervor, which in many ways is a good thing. But let's also not forget that, you know, within the last decade, we learned, you know, that, you know, the Catholic Church was essentially shipping around pedophiles at different churches. And we already know their corrupt history. So he talks a good game, and people make some good memes. But, you know, let's not forget that it's about action. And he needs, you're right, he's got a lot of good talk, but he's got to do some action now.
Yeah, Jake, I totally agree with you. Thank you for bringing that up. I think those are all extremely valid points that need to be discussed. And to add to that, I just wanted to note, you know, I looked over some articles on what the Pope talked about today, and he talked about climate change. He talked about helping the poor. He talked about immigration, and those are all really relevant things that should be discussed. But I noticed it didn't seem like he talked to Obama about the drone war. And I know that he's spoken about war and corporate profit in that context before. So it was a little disappointing to me. And it could still be on the internet. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Let me know. I would love to see a quote or a story that he actually discussed this with Obama. But this seems to be sort of a common thread. I know the Dalai Lama has done the same thing. He's come and he's met with Obama. And these are these huge world religious leaders that talk such a good game about peace and about really changing the world. And they have so much reach. And it's amazing that they talk about it to the extent that they do. But it does seem like they sort of duck their principles when it comes to political opportunities.
Well, someone commented on an article I wrote about Oliver Stone's, you know, saying that, you know, America is a bigger threat to ISIS. And one sole comment really stood out to me. It was just two words: controlled opposition. And I immediately knew what he was saying, which is that the establishment, you know, trots out or allows certain figures to trot out and say you know, bites of opposition that still stay within a certain spectrum. And they don't go outside that spectrum. The extremes inform the mean, and so you end up, you know, with the people in the middle thinking the extremes have been represented because you have these extreme figures saying extreme things, when in reality these are controlled parameters. And I think that the Pope is another instance of that. And a lot of the stuff he's saying, albeit I love it, I love talk of climate change and how we have to change the system and, you know, eviscerate, you know, the current capitalistic system. I love that. I love it. But to me, I'm not buying it.
Yeah, man. And, you know, the other thing I like hearing from the Pope is his talk about refugees, because, you know, the Catholics, unfortunately, are some of the people that really need to be talked about regarding the refugee crisis, especially in Europe. You know, a lot of the conservative sector of these countries are Catholic in Eastern Europe, and they're the ones that are most, many of the time, most resistant to allowing refugees in, whether we're talking about Hungary or the Czech Republic and places like that. you know, so I really did like what he was saying about refugees and encouraging the churches, each church, to allow at least one refugee to come take refuge inside the church. And, you know, that's really good talk, and hopefully it changes a few hearts and minds out there. But in the end, when it comes to the Vatican, we all know that the Vatican is rich as hell, right? They've got all this money. They've been storing it up for 1,000 years. They got all this gold. They got all, you know, people, many people say they're one of the richest institutions in the world. And
they're like an old corporation.
Yeah, they're like one of the oldest corporations in the world. But I don't see them spending any money, dude. I don't see them sending money out there to help the refugees really that much. I don't see them sending money to these churches to build refugee camps at the churches. I don't see them doing much of that. So once again, what I see of this Pope, and very much like you said, Jake, he's talking a great game. He's improving the reputation of the church. But in the end, what is actually changing policy-wise and money-wise to actually give us any indication that he's actually doing anything? I don't see much of it. Unless anyone on the call tonight can tell me otherwise, that's pretty much what I see. So yeah, man. The other thing about this Pope, which is good, but once again, it's rhetoric only, is that, you know, he apologized to all the people that have been subjected to sexual molestation as children, and you know, because this is that's basically an epidemic. It's happened all over the place, all over the world. We got a story out on the anti-media today, by John Vibes, regarding some recent investigations that have been going on, thanks to the Global Post, regarding what's being done with a lot of these priests that, you know, in the U.S., a lot of these priests that are being accused of sex crimes against children, pedophilia, sexual abuse, things like that, and what's been going on with them. Well, the first thing that I want to talk about is that most of these guys aren't being prosecuted. There's been a few occasions where there have been some guys that ended up getting in trouble, but a lot of them are not being prosecuted. And what's happening is they're settling these abuse cases outside of court, and therefore, you know, these priests are getting away with just, you know, settling for money, and the church is covering all that stuff.
That's what they need their money for, Nick. That's why they can't spend money on anything else, is they have these hundreds of thousands of sex abuse cases they have to settle.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. They're spending a lot of money to cover up for these other priests. They're not letting them go to jail. But this investigation by the Global Post unveiled something really, really saddening, I guess you could say. A lot of what's going on is these priests, instead of being fired or being thrown in jail, they're just moving them to other countries. They're moving them to poor countries in particular, including Paraguay, Ecuador, Colombia, Brazil, and Peru. They're putting them down there to get them out of the spotlight, to get them out of from under the scrutiny. And it's basically giving them carte blanche to just go ahead and continue to find more victims, to continue to molest children in many third world countries instead, where they're not going to get caught or they're not going to be prosecuted. Nothing's going to happen. I mean, this is just sickening. This is sickening. And of course, like I said, the Pope has come out and he's said that he apologizes to the people that have fallen victim. But in the end, this shit is going on right now under our noses. And nothing is really being done to stop it. And I sure as hell don't think the Pope's doing anything. And in fact, I know he's not, because if he was, he'd be out here making moves and make sure it stops. But he's not, you know. So this is a whole other thing. This epidemic of child abuse has not gone away. Hopefully, it's slowing down because it's become such a scandal that the priests that are inclined to do that kind of thing are like second guessing themselves and resisting the urge to do what they were doing, because they know that they're probably going to get caught now. But it's really sad to see that instead of getting these guys being accountable, they're just sending them to these other countries where they're going to find more and more children to prey on. This is just sickening. I mean, I really can't believe it. I mean, it's just
horrible. If you've been caught, if you've been caught, I mean, that's inexcusable. If you've been caught doing something like that, it's a crime. It's the kids that experience it are effed up for the rest of their life. Even excusing one is wrong. They excuse thousands. They're literally facilitating the molestation of children. So quite frankly, I don't care how many memes there are, I don't care how much he says about global warming or climate change, until the Pope cracks down on sexual abuse within the church, he's full of fucking shit.
Well, but then at the same time, you know, we have our government that gets rid of a Marine guy because he stops this guy from raping these kids, and his superiors are telling them, well, these people are going to be our allies, and we can, that's what they do over there in that country, and just leave them alone, turn a blind eye like that. But we have that problem here in this country with the military. Supposedly, going out there to defend, you know, justice and basically the underdog, and we're not protecting these kids from being, you know, basically raped by these rich people. They're going to be our allies. They're going to be put in position by the... So this poor Marine, he kicks his ass and stuff like that, and now that Marine has to be basically retired, you know? So that's also a problem there.
Yeah, exactly, man. That's exactly the story I was about to shift into here on that topic, because this one really hit me hard. The first guy that's involved in this case, Lance Corporal Gregory Buckley Jr., he's dead now. He got shot by one of these kids, and unfortunately, he wasn't the one that was, he wasn't even one of the ones that was responsible for it. In fact, he was the one causing a fuss, because it was going on. In fact, the last thing he said to his son, to his dad on the phone from Afghanistan, at night we could hear them screaming, but we're not allowed to do anything about it. That was the last thing he said to his dad. And basically what's going on in Afghanistan is that there's this also a whole other culture, very similar to what's going on in, within a, some of these factions of the Catholic Church, where they use little kids to pull off twisted sex acts. And, you know, this stuff is being done by the Afghan security forces, which are the guys that the U.S. government is backing up right now, training them to do, you know, to supposedly keep that country stable once we fully, you know, pull our military out of there. So what's going on is that the commanders, the people that are giving the orders out to the Marines, to the Army, to the soldiers that are out there, they're telling them not to report any of this sexual abuse that's going on. They're telling them, hey, you know what? They've been doing it for a long time. We just got to look the other way, right? And the entire reason they're doing this is because they don't want the word getting back to the U.S. that we're over there training a bunch of pedophiles to you know, as our allies. You know what I'm saying? So they don't want us looking bad, so they're telling the soldiers, look, just don't say nothing about it. You know, we know what's going on. Just don't say nothing about it, and it'll be fine. Well, unfortunately, there was – well, fortunately, I guess, there was one Marine that said, you know what? I'm not going to just stand by idly and watch this happen anymore. His name was Captain Dan Quinn. And he ended up beating one of these guys up because he was tired of seeing it go on. And what happened to him, he didn't get, you know, praised. He didn't get, you know, a promotion. He didn't get a, any kind of medal or anything like that. He's now being forced into retirement. And he's been punished for standing up and you know, doing what is right. I mean, yeah, he's over there fighting a war that is very questionable, to say the least. But, you know, in this situation, he's standing up against a pedophile. He's standing up for the children. And now he's being punished for it. I mean, it just goes to show how twisted our foreign policy is, that we're literally instructing our soldiers to look the other way while children are being molested. This just blows my fucking mind, dude. I just really don't understand it. What do you guys think about this? I mean, this is just... What do we do about it? How do we stop it?
It doesn't surprise me. I don't think you can do anything about it. Our government has a literally... It's almost like a motto of, it doesn't matter if people die. I mean, that should be the motto. The Navy commercials, or they, you know, the Marine commercials, be all you can be. The slogan should be, we don't care if people die. That should be the logo, or the motto.
As horrible as that sounds, man, I mean, it's relatively accurate.
We don't care if people die. We don't care if they get abused. Nothing matters except the acquisition of resources and consolidation of the empire. That's all that matters.
Well, and that's the thing, is if these wars aren't motivated to really help people, you can't expect the consequences of the wars to be dealt with in any different way. I mean, they're not going to step in and advocate for moral behavior when they're doing their best just to make it seem like the operation hasn't completely fallen apart.
It's all just collateral damage to them. That's what they call it.
Yeah, man. You know, and so taking this into account, what other things are they turning the other way on? You know what I mean? And, you know, what other things are they just not saying anything about? We know that the media is pretty much working hand in hand with them as far as, you know, covering their tracks. Thankfully, this thing was broken by the New York Times and we're able to report on it. But, you know, this stuff is covered up. Outlets just won't cover it, you know. And, you know, thankfully there are media outlets out there that are willing to tell the truth about what's going on and about the foreign policy and all this stuff. In fact, there was a report that came out on fair.org the other day regarding how the U.S. is just the U.S. media establishment is kind of just erasing history in many ways, including the CIA's intervention in Syria and the whole ISIS creation thing. You know, they're literally just leaving this stuff out of the reports, man. And a lot of it has to do with foreign policy. There isn't an establishment news outlet out there that doesn't work, you know, hand in hand with the government when it comes to foreign policy. We see the whole thing, how it went down with Iraq and how they convinced everybody that that was a good idea. They tried to convince us all to go into Syria. And you know, of course, now they talk about ISIS all the time. But where's the coverage of Saudi Arabia? Saudi Arabia is about to crucify a guy for being a protester.
At the same time that they're named the head of the Commission on Human Rights for the UN, or maybe not the head, but I know that they've
been named to a leading involved. They've been named to a leading position on the panel for human rights at the UN.
And the US applauds this.
And they're about to chop a guy's head off and crucify him for being a protester.
A teenager.
This is a global synarchy of democratic terrorists, and nothing's going to change. I just finished an article about the deep state and the overall collusion between all agencies to keep up the war on terror and keep the revolving door between the defense contractors, the military, and the government. Nothing is going to change. We're going to keep having these wars of terror. Nothing will change until a critical mass of Americans literally refuse to work and refuse to pay taxes and just literally just march on Washington. And I don't know what would be necessary to incite such a thing or what the reaction would be, but people need to wake up and look at the real picture of what's going on. And until that happens, it's just the same thing's going to go on and on. Nothing's going to change.
Yeah, man, I agree with you. Some major action has got to go take place to really put the stop to this empire, man. I don't know what it's going to be either, but something's got to be done. Sooner or later, it's got to stop. Anyway, we got to take a break from this foreign policy stuff. I mean, we got to cover a little bit of local news here, actually, out of San Diego. It looks like one of our local activist groups called United Against Police Terror San Diego has been receiving or has received a threatening letter from the from someone that thought they were being anonymous, but fortunately, when you sign into someone's website, it tracks your IP address, and they were able to track the IP back to the San Diego Sheriff's Department. And so this is a pretty major story. It's become somewhat of a national narrative here, and it kind of just a little bit of an insight into the thoughts that are coming out of these police departments. And the opening line to this email is, F you stupid pieces of shit, you know, and this is how they open it up. And it gets kind of worse from there. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's laced with bad words and horrible things.
No, read more. That was a fantastic opening.
Yeah, and it's full of spelling errors and bad grammar and all that stuff. I mean, the guy is probably not the brightest. Then again, what do you really expect from police departments that purposely hire but I mean, this is pretty scary stuff, man. It really goes to show the militant mindset that still is perpetuating in these law enforcement agencies. I think there has been some decent reforms. I think that the rate of people getting killed by the cops is going to slowly start to go down a little bit over time. But a lot of these cops, because of all the public outrage, have been even more militarized, I think, and become even more nationalized, or whatever you want to call it. They become more more aggression, I guess, more angry at the people. And you know, the police brutality topic has kind of slid from the headlines a little bit ever since Baltimore settled down. But this is something that is ongoing that people need to stay vigilant on, you know, holding police accountable, holding the government accountable, any agent of the state. We need to fight for transparency, accountability, respect. Thank you all for tuning in to the Anti-Media Radio. Catch us Monday through Friday, same place, same time. Peace out.
Good night, Nick. Good night, Jake. Good night, Terry.
I'ma let him know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.